You're listening to DraftKings Network.
We've got a special episode today on the Cooligans.
It's an NY Fest special.
That's right. NY Fest is tomorrow if you're listening to this on Friday when we release this. If not, if you're listening to this on Saturday and you happen to be in New York, get off your ass while you're listening to this and get down to Brooklyn Bridge Park, Pier 5. We've got NY Fest where Christian and I are going to be on microphones just like these for 8 straight hours.
It's going to be incredible. And this show, we have incredible guests. We have Michael Zimbalist. We have
Ethan Zahn.
Kenny Foster.
And we've got a special
and
surprise
a special little surprise guest. So
everybody, you're surprise guest.
A hot show.
We got
show.
That and more on this episode, this special episode of the Cooligans! Yeah, baby!
Oh, sound.
Look at this. That was explosive. Just not bad for a second take.
A little peek behind the curtain. I made a great joke on the first take, and yeah. I don't know if I should do it again.
Do it again.
I didn't know we were going to get the guy from Police Academy on the show. Wow.
That was great.
Better the second time.
And that's all we got for you tonight.
People here might not know this, but this is a special episode.
Welcome to the Cooligans podcast. This is a special NY Fest episode. Which is
happening tomorrow, if you're listening to this right when we put this out.
Yeah, that's right.
Saturday
at Brooklyn Bridge Park, April 21st. NY Fest is...
look at it. It's right here. Show them the goods.
Boom, nice. Boom.
I mean, take off the shirt.
Take off the shirt. All right. We also did that joke
we
before.
We did that bit too.
Because the
by the way, mine was very tight.
Comedy's
really
always
good.
I'm not doing the whole
it's
thing.
Really good.
Everybody knows that joke's always better the second
the
time
second
you
time.
Hear it.
It's only better if you explain it or if you say it again.
But we are excited to have two special guests today. We have our first guest, Ethan Zahn.
Ethan Zahn, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
The co-founder of Grassroots Soccer.
Absolutely.
All right. And
which, if you don't know what Grassroots Soccer is, it's the charity that's benefiting, one of the charities, right? One of the charities that's benefiting from NY Fest.
Correct.
It's pretty cool, which is what we're hosting, which is why he's wearing this dope swag.
Exactly. So, and also we have country music star Kenny Foster.
Kenny Foster, everybody. All the way from Nashville.
It feels good.
By the way, country music star and soccer fan and play soccer, which
All right.
No one thought that existed.
This is officially your coming out party, you know? Telling your friends you enjoy soccer. Yeah. That's, wow.
Yeah. Although Nashville's gonna have an MLS team.
We are.
Yeah.
2020.
Yeah. That's gonna
the
be
fact that there was a fan base in the South at all. Atlanta shocked the heck out of us.
Sure.
You know, those of us up here, we live on our elite East Coast bubbles, and we don't believe that anything exists.
You said
in the middle
it, not me.
But boy, did you smile when I said it. We live in our... And there's a bubble here that we don't think that there's like a lot of fandom for soccer outside of the coasts. And you're standing here or sitting here is proof that that's not true.
Living proof.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're about to have a new rival with Atlanta United.
Oh my God, yeah.
Is there already any rivalry between the two cities outside of soccer?
Well, there were hockey teams at one time, and when it was just got knocked down to Nashville as being the hockey team in the area. We gladly welcomed Atlanta to come over.
But this is
not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some supreme throwdowns. They have a really sexy
stadium. It's hot chicken versus lemon pepper wings.
You at least got your cuisine down.
Oh, come on. If it's the one thing the fat guy on the show knows, it's the food.
By the way,
hot chicken, not that hot for me.
Ooh,
at least.
We're going to fight later. I'll send you.
Well, speaking of rivalry, Ethan Zahn, you may remember him from Survivor, right?
Yep.
You may remember him from also, if you're fans of the team that are rival to the team that we're season ticket holders to, you were the host of a Metro Star / Red Bull show.
Do you remember a guy by the name of Shep Messing?
Of course I do.
Of course.
Posed nude during his playing career.
Yeah,
right here.
Playgirl. Yes. like a packet of skull bandits, you know, taped over certain
That's
areas.
How I first heard of him. That's how I first heard of him.
That's the poster I had on my wall. Huge soccer fan.
He was telling me stories that, you know, he was playing, you know, Giant Stadium, 70,000 people, Pele, and they're hucking, like, tins of, like, skull. You know, or Copenhagen at his head, and he'd pick it up off the ground, he'd open it up, fill his mouth up and he'd wave to the crowd.
Wow.
What a time.
The dream, right?
Just what a time. People just launching carcinogens at you as you play. What a time. Just babies smoking in the stands.
Like the goalkeepers are literally lighting up. Like,
yeah. I don't know. Hell of a save. And he didn't spill a drop of scotch. That guy. Get that guy. He now calls games. For the Rebels. And, you know, he's still playing like, he's still talking like he has some head injuries. That's pretty awesome. He's like, it's a lot of fun to listen to that guy.
Well, I'm glad. I'm just glad he's employed. That's all.
Of course.
So I'm actually curious about this. Yeah. I wasn't like an avid Survivor watcher, but it was an incredibly popular show at the time. You won Survivor Africa. So I'm just curious, what was that experience like? You must have been like clearly a celebrity for that, like 2-3 years of like everybody just knew who you were. And what is that? Yeah, what was that like?
I mean, it was a crazy scenario. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I obviously thought I prepared for the show like Survivor, but like, when's the last time you heard about a nice Jewish boy in the middle of the desert? It's just like, it doesn't happen.
No one ever said, so. I mean, imagine someone said to a Jewish kid from Massachusetts, we're going to throw you in the middle of Africa see if you survive.
You'd be like, my mom? Let me bring my mom.
So do the guys with cameras, are they there to protect me?
I obviously loved it. It was way back in the day, 2001. You know, reality TV was a little bit on the upswing.
True.
We were in Kenya, Africa, and had a
where Barack Obama's from.
Born and raised.
I actually voted him off first. So
where he spent.
I'm sorry, dude.
You hung out with his family. So, Mr. Obama.
It's so cool. I mean, there's reality TV right now is in a different place where you should be flipping over tables, smacking a woman, and like fighting over like ridiculous things.
You should be a housewife.
That's Thursdays.
Also, if you hosted Survivor, you could be president soon.
Right?
Anything is possible.
I did have a cameo on Celebrity Apprentice. So
did you really?
I did, because a guy by the name of Richard Hatch, who was one of the original winners of was the first winner of Survivor.
Yep. Yeah, okay. That's right.
He was on Celebrity Apprentice, and he played for my charity, Grassroots Soccer.
Oh, that's
really
cool.
So I got
really
to make
cool.
an appearance, meet Donald Trump, meet all
yeah.
those.
Okay,
yeah, that's
cool.
Really that's awesome. Were you on the – who was the guy that everyone hated that always did the two peace signs? Do you remember that guy?
Johnny Fairplay.
Yeah. What a terrible. Everyone
hated
that guy.
Lexicon.
That's the only thing I remember. Was that your season?
That was not my season. Oh, okay. That was my season. They all blend together.
Yeah, they do.
Don't watch that reality stuff. It's bad.
Mm. Yeah, of course not. I mean, unless you're on it and you win. And then it's pretty, pretty good.
So how did it go from, was Grassroots Soccer, was that in existence before Survivor or was that after?
Grassroots Soccer was not in existence before Survivor. So, prior to my time on Survivor, getting back to the whole soccer world, I lived and played soccer in the Zimbabwe Premier League for a team called the Highlanders Football Club.
Okay.
Now, but you played in the USL before or after
Correct.
That?
Before.
Before. How did you get to what you played for Zimbabwe before Survivor Africa?
Yes.
So, okay. I thought maybe it was like a promotional stunt afterwards. Like, he's already in Africa. Let's just go play for the team.
Soccer was my life. You know, wanted to do the whole professional thing. Moved to Hawaii. Because there's like a smaller team in Hawaii.
Yeah.
I felt I had a good shot at making it. Made it as a walk-on backup keeper. Then I'm like, screw the rest of my life. I want to play soccer. I traveled around, bouncing around teams, you know, trying to make it. Ended up in Zimbabwe.
If you don't mind me asking. Out of that, because most people don't hear about.
Right.
Yeah. You can't just throw that out
Zimbabwe
there.
And soccer.
You can't just throw that out there.
Took a wrong turn, and I'm in Zimbabwe now.
The plane landed in Zimbabwe, and I was like, I got a ball.
They asked me to jump out.
Well, honestly, the guy, do you know Andrew Hsu?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Andrew Hsu.
LA Galaxy
LA
legend.
Galaxy.
There you go.
He would practice shoeless. Andrew Hsu. Andrew Hsu List. Yeah.
So Andrew Hsu played at Dartmouth, and then a coach at Dartmouth, this guy Bobby Clark, went to Zimbabwe and was a coach for a year. He brought Andrew Hsu over in the late 80s. And ever since Andrew Hsu went over and they won the championship, they started bringing kind of U.S.-based American players to play Zimbabwe. I think
the original designated player.
Yeah. Bruce Grobelaar.
Really?
Played for this team. I don't know.
Wow.
Bruce Grobelaar. He played for the Highlanders back in the day. He's Zimbabwean, Bruce Grobelaar. But anyway, so yeah, I think they needed at least like one white person on the team to feel like they could win. It was like a good luck, bad luck thing.
Well, weird quotas they have in Zimbabwe.
And I was that white. I was the white.
What
guy,
a great name, though. Highlanders.
Yeah. Like Highlanders.
Pulling sabers from your back.
Yeah. It's the
Lorenzo Lamas is like, I'll do it.
The tagline for the team was, "They can only be one white man."
That is great. Bring out the gentrifier.
I sat at the end of the bench.
The colonizer is here. Welcome.
And also, so Kenny, what's your background in soccer? I know that you're a big Spurs. Both of you guys are big Spurs fans.
Surprise. Yeah.
But what's your background? How do you guys even know each other?
Look, Giroud's
so he was in Nashville just last week.
Yeah,
to be
just
honest,
last week.
And came to a show, and then he came to a video premiere for my friends, and we just hit it off. First the Spurs thing, and then he was like, "Hey, do you want to come play this tournament?" And I said, "Yes, I do."
That's really dope. That's really cool.
I grew up in Missouri, which is the very middle of the country.
Yeah,
in case you guys, I could pull a map out.
Well, I have no idea what it looks like.
I don't mean to like New York explain, but it's Missouri.
Yeah.
I love that you're telling me how to say my state's name. It's true elitism at its finest.
No, it's cute what you pronounce it, but let's show you how.
Yeah, that's cool, but let me. I don't know if you know.
Let's let a Dominican kid from Brooklyn tell you.
So I grew up in Missouri, and I did through high school ODP, and then I ended up playing D1 at Belmont, which is in Nashville.
Oh,
so
dope.
So I played at Belmont, realized very quickly with the infrastructure, at least when I graduated, there was no chance of going semi-pro from what I knew, because I didn't grow up on the coasts where you knew what to do from this point.
Well, you're only allowed to go pro.
Only allowed to go pro.
Only if you live on the coast.
Truly. Yeah. Truly. So that's when I made the transition over to music, but this was back in 2000.
You said 16 if you didn't hear. 2016.
So haven't looked back since, man, to be honest.
That's really cool. Do you find any parallels between the music industry and soccer? Because for us, when comedy is something we've both done for about 10 years,
absolutely,
and we find a ton of crossover between how musicians have to sort of track that route, or chefs, things like that.
Sure.
Did you find anything similar? Did your soccer experience help you in your
music?
You
know what? That's actually really interesting. I think that there are. I think that the opportunities that come to some players are stroke of luck, where you grew up, who saw you on what particular day. I mean, the number of routes that you can get to go from youth player to professional, there's so many things that can go wrong. And there's so many hurdles you have to jump over. And music's the exact same way. The interesting thing is that I think the entry level to get into music is probably not as high as it is for professional soccer. Uh-huh. So I would almost say that the randomness that it is that people that get to go on stage and do it at the highest level in music is probably even more random than it would be. Because on a field, look, you know who the best players are, the ones that are netting goals or doing huge stops. Like, you know who's best. It's a pretty objective thing.
Yeah,
right, for sure.
With music, it's way more subjective. So I have a great affinity for professional players that play at the top of their game and continually do it.
What position did you play?
I was central midfielder, so the Erickson role, probably a number one.
Very nice.
All right.
The creative. Come on, man.
He's the only guy.
I love every second of it.
I mean,
I hate every second of it.
It's at the top of that position. Nobody else plays it better than him. Yeah.
Go to the number one club in the world is what you want to reference.
Yeah, basically. This one.
You even have the blue and white armbands.
I mean, you know it. Come on, man.
So this T-shirt is Nashville Spurs.
Nashville Spurs.
So you guys have a supporters
club. Official supporters club. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
very nice.
What's the Spurs support like in Nashville?
It's phenomenal, man. Well, we probably have on the books like over 220 folks.
Oh, nice.
That's incredible.
We're having actually change pubs because we've outgrown the one we're in now. So, but on any given day, we've got a lot of solid folks. Shout out, boys and girls. Oof, yeah. I got it there.
Everybody,
all of the people. Yeah. And it's phenomenal. And we actually got to host Spurs last summer because they did for ICC.
That's right.
They came through they played Man City at Nissan Stadium. And we had a huge tailgate, and we had like 3,000 Spurs fans that came in. We had our own section.
That's really awesome.
And it's a blast. It really.
Did you sing for them?
I did. I sang for
you
the
sang like directly to Christian Eriksen.
Yeah. I did actually.
A slap. Well,
yeah, he was like, "Can you leave my hotel room?"
It's like, but we're one, Christian.
Baby, Come. It's the only song
we played the same position.
Come on, it's like
speaking of positions. but we
just closed the curtain.
They invited me to play the team dinner actually, so I played for all the players and for the coaches.
That's
at their hotel.
Dude, it was
are they country music fans?
No, to be honest, they had no idea. But by the end, I threw in. I've done this a little while.
Yeah,
I wrote like an 8.5 minute medley of all of the chants and players' chants that we have. And
that's so awesome!
I sang it out, and we had a freaking blast.
That's really cool.
Do you have it like recorded? Is it?
Yeah,
anywhere?
Actually, official Spurs put it out on their Twitter on their Spurs TV. I've got an episode. I went to the training grounds and
oh yeah, we got to share it. Please tag us.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah,
we'll share it. I know Alexis will not appreciate it.
I will. But I will share. I don't know why no one can see this. This
middle finger emojis.
I deleted our account. What are the odds?
So let's talk a little bit more about grassroots soccer. I know we did mention it. It is is one of the charities that is being supported by NYFest.
And the goal is to help deter, the youth from contracting AIDS out in Africa. Correct? Did I say that correctly?
Correct, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so New York Fest is awesome. It's the New York Film and Entertainment Soccer Tournament, and they have one in here. They have one in L.A. Each tournament is a charity tournament, so they support, you know, either local or global charities. Grassroots Soccer has been involved with them for a long time, so it's a really great partnership. And what Grassroots Soccer does, we're an adolescent health organization. We use the power of soccer to kind of educate, inspire, mobilize communities to make healthier choices in life. And the way we do that is we train professional soccer players, coaches, peer leaders from the community, and then we send them into the classrooms, soccer fields, soccer clubs, churches, wherever, to deliver that health intervention.
That's really cool. Yeah. And I know soccer is huge in Africa, but are you finding that this is sort of a viable route to help kids get a better education and to get better understanding of what's actually happening?
Completely, yeah. We've found through our work that like the power of a positive role model. These coaches, these are the ones who are delivering this health intervention. You know, they are their heroes. They're the role models. They're the gods of the community. So you can imagine the impact when we send one of these players, coaches, into the classrooms with the kids. I mean, their eyes pop open, their jaws drop, and we end up changing their behavior so they can go out there and make the right choices.
That's awesome. Have any former players like Didier Drogba, things like that, some of the bigger names from Africa, are they getting involved? Is it something that you're hoping to draw them in, of course?
So we did a campaign with Nike back in 2010. Drogba was there, Lace Up and Save Lives. It was a Nike kind of red campaign. But we have Quentin Fortune. We have Kristen Press, who's a professional player. David Beckham, Sir Alex Ferguson, Robert Pires, Freddie Lundberg.
Ooh, Robert Pires and Freddie Lundberg. Ooh.
For some reason.
I've heard of them. Actually, some people used to say that I was the Robert Pires of the buffet. So I really was.
You can get up and down the planks of the buffet.
Smorgasbord, if you will.
Just it rolls perfectly onto a plate. Just my wife was trying to block them.
Another thing, we were talking about this before we started recording, but coincidentally, you are cousins with a comedian friend of ours.
Yeah.
John Fish.
He's super funny, by the way.
He's super funny.
Hilarious, dude. He's been on he was on David Letterman. He was on The Late Show.
Yep. He's been on so many late shows. Super jealous of him.
He's been in my living room.
Yeah. Wow.
I saw him there. It was a really good show.
Who books that?
It's always exciting because there's surprisingly, we've been doing stand-up a while, and we rarely get to find this overlap between comedy and soccer. But
there is
quite a bit. There's a bunch of comedians that either went to college with players that are in MLS, stuff like that. So
I'm sure you've seen him a bunch, right, John Fish,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. When was the last time I saw him? Was it like Gotham on 23rd and 5th or something?
Yeah.
Is that where it is? Yeah, that's the last
time
I saw
sure.
him.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, for sure. Oh, awesome.
Way back.
So,
way back.
That's so it's on Perform.
That's yeah. Yeah.
So we haven't we haven't seen John in a little while, but I know you haven't either.
Hey guys.
So we brought
there he is.
It's a family reunion up here.
Hold on. Hey, good to meet you, man.
Have a seat, buddy.
Hey, John.
What's up, man?
Nice to see you.
I just saw your honor.
To hold your
Do you guys need any water?
Have some more bread, please.
Have a seat. Have a seat, John.
Nice. That was epic.
I saw your dad last couple weeks ago.
I saw him the other day. He says hello.
That's why I asked if you guys have seen each other for a while.
No, I think because I was thinking about the last time I saw you. You were running the marathon.
Oh, baby, yeah.
But like, Everyone shouting his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I have it on my chest.
Right. No. I tried that. It doesn't work.
And so he does like a double take. And I'm like, yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I think you sent your dad a picture. It's like a blurry view, like 1,000 yards.
You're just mushing women that are his fans out of the way. Like, I know him personally.
So we've gotten to know, this is the first time we're meeting Ethan. How does it, now we can ask you, how does it feel to be the way less successful family member?
Well, I can tell you this. I might have the timeline wrong, but he was on...
Survivor.
No, after Survivor, he was on Letterman before me.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's like on Letterman twice. Dream of a, the dream of a comedian. But he was he did very well. So you were like, oh, okay, because he's an inventor also, and he has. I don't remember.
You're also an inventor.
We're learning so much.
Ready? Cereal bowl for people that like the cereal still crunchy. A level to keep the cereal at, and a level for the milk.
Son of a... You've invented an As Seen on TV product?
Yes. Yeah. Anthony Sullivan and Billy Mays were my pitch men. And I launched... You know, you fill out those cards when you go on Letterman. He's like, what are your hobbies? I'm like, I'm an inventor. And of course, that's a one question he asked me. He's like, so what have you invented? And I'm like, I really hadn't invented anything at the time. I'm like, it's a cereal bowl that keeps your cereal crunchy all day long. You know, imagine a swimming pool. Swimming's going to shallow and in the deep end. You keep your cereal up top. You put your milk down below. And you want a little crunch, you just sweep it over the edge. So then, and then the crowd clapped. I was like, all right, this might be a good idea.
Yeah. So and you're like, made it. And it can only have seven easy payments of $1.99.
Meet me up front.
Yeah. Free shipping and handling.
Just cash only.
Yeah. So, that's your merch for when you go on late night shows? So wait, is that what you blew your million on?
Basically, and then now you have to
Well, I think this is a better investment.
I invented a bowl. Everyone.
A bowl. Which, listen to me. I mean, you're speaking directly to me. He's not paying attention. He drinks powdered water.
Soylent. You ever heard of Soylent?
Look at the sadness. First of all, the Southern guys like heard of it. Don't want it anywhere near me.
It's like powdered food that has like it's like completely nutritious and it's.
Someone said, "How do we take all the fun out of food?" And,
do you take that as a pill?
No. It's like a drink. A drink, and you drink it, and you're just not hungry, and it's like efficient and easy. And he makes
like
fun
torture.
Of me for it, and
sounds
and
like
Brave
torture.
New World-ish. Yeah. No big deal.
Yeah.
No. If you made it like a topping for pizza, maybe.
Oh. Sure, yeah, that would be
it. Crust, sauce, and cheese, and that's it.
Or if you just put in little that, lines. Yeah,
he's,
you know. Yeah,
yeah. He's like a pizza
expert. He's an expert.
Expert. Yeah.
No, for real, expert.
Yes.
Real,
yeah.
Legit.
Have you been to the Pizza Expo in Vegas?
I get flown out every year. And I do a talk at the Pizza Expo every year. Yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
That's really special.
Well, the talk is mostly, you guys don't know nothing about pizza.
No, 100% is. It 100% is. It's me yelling at all Midwesterners and Southerners going, stop ruining it. Why? Garlic butter and ranch do not belong anywhere near pizza. Neither does pineapple.
It's great. I have friends visiting right now, and they were going to the museum in Astoria, moving pictures, and they were like, "What's the best slice out there?" I'm like, "Well, that's kind of at the beginning of Astoria. You want to go to Rosario's?
Yeah. Yes,
out where I am. Yeah. But you're staying in Times Square, so you go. I pulled up the email when you told me about the best slice. It's right around here.
Yeah.
I pulled it, and I said it to, what is it, Suprema?
Suprema's really dope. Scars in Orchard and Hester's really dope. There's a bunch of great ones. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, people are taking your advice,
And now I'm happier than you are that he's here.
So, John, look, so this is a soccer podcast.
Yeah.
What's your connection to soccer besides Ethan?
Wait, hold on. Ethan even got on a soccer podcast before you.
Moments!
Someone's going to sneak up to murder him. Yeah. And Ethan's going to be like, excuse me, man.
No, this one I don't want first. Right. You're just at Thanksgiving going like, oh.
My grandfather played.
Okay.
A little. And that's it.
Not bad.
Good enough to be on this podcast.
The bar is very low.
It is
I
a
set
comedy
you up
podcast.
With him.
That's a good point.
Yes. Yeah, we spoke. I think we emailed, it must have been like a year ago.
No, probably two. Maybe yeah, probably just two right at the beginning of our podcast, ago,
but,
yeah.
But this was, I'm glad we waited. This was... this was perfect.
Yeah, the synergy was perfect this time. So are you going to be able to come down maybe at NY Fest, check these guys out playing, and check us out hosting?
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
You can play in the celebrity game.
Ooh.
Bring it.
Yeah, they need people to hand out Gatorade.
I'll bring out slices.
What are your skills like? You still, you know.
Think you still got it?
You think you still got it?
No.
I mean. You're more of a yoga guy.
I'm a yoga guy. Yeah. But like. Soccer's the hardest. Like,
well, wait till Yoga Fest. He's not going to get in. Yeah. He's not getting Yoga Fest.
I love strawberry yogurt, vanilla yogurt.
It's all good. Yeah,
I love frozen yogurt.
A lot of probiotics, baby.
That's not powder. The kind of sport that you could just hop back into.
No, sure, it's not. Yeah. Which I showed in a video we did recently.
Yeah, we did. We played in the NYCFC 24-hour game. I play regularly. We have a team. We have a team of all comedians. You're more
they
welcome
set up
to,
a whole thing. Right
you're more than welcome to try
rock.
Out.
Irene, is Irene playing?
Irene, yeah.
I'll see her. Her Instagram stories give me anxiety. Yeah. That's how.
But we play. I scored.
They asked us to play right in front of 30 Rock, like cameras everywhere. It's a 24-hour game. They asked us to play, and I'm like, no, you mean like show up and wave, right? And they're like, no, play. And he's like, all right, I'm ready for it. All right, everyone slow down. They asked us to go in, so I was like, look, I'm definitely not going to play well, so I might as well do something funny. So I put something in my back pocket. As soon as he scored, we like moments as we go in, he scores. I pull a sandwich out of my back pocket as my celebration, and I just start eating it. And
best people went celebration.
People went insane. All the cameras were like, look at me, look at me, look at me. I'm like eating a lot now. I'm almost choking. And they're like, playing the game, playing the game. I'm like, I've got a baguette in my mouth. I got an entire baguette in my mouth.
It was a great, great moment. So that's he's the top of his position. All right.
So no one steal that celebration.
So again, NY Fest is tomorrow, Saturday, April 21st at Brooklyn Bridge Park.
It's like from 9 to 6 p.m. It's there all day. Come through, hang out. Yeah. Us on mic for 8 hours.
Make sure you follow NY Fest on all social media, nyfest.org, ny_fest. And what are you guys' social media handles? Let people know where they can follow you.
Kenny is go.
Kenny is go?
Okay. He may not be good, but he's go.
Oh, he's go.
You check out grassrootssoccer.org. That's awesome. My, you know, ezon.com, my personal website.
All right.
So, yeah.
And Fishy?
Ethan Zahn's cousin.
the Jewish guy that won Survivor.
.net. At Hotmail.
Johnny Fish on Twitter.
Johnny Fish.
Fish, you have a new podcast out now.
Spiraling Up.
That's right.
Yes.
Really?
So check that out as well.
I was a guest on yours.
That's right. You were on my podcast. Yeah.
That's right.
We got to get on yours, bro.
I better not say anything
so
now.
You have a collective podcast and then you have individual podcasts?
We did at one point. This is our main.
This is our main.
With our powers combined.
Before that was our training in podcast.
Sure.
And by the way, before we forget, this honestly is one of the funniest comedians in all of New York City. All jokes aside.
Thank you.
Come on, buddy. This guy.
Hilarious.
Shows up with stains on his shirts the whole night. He is one of the funniest guys
in New York. Thank you so much for doing this.
Just sweat. Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this. Surprising Ethan,
course.
Man.
Yeah,
really,
he waived
really cool.
his appearance fee in lieu of a donation to Grassroots Soccer. He's been doing it for 20 years, actually.
I could get your appearance fee. We got glasses of water.
All right. So thank you again for listening and watching. You guys are the absolute
Kenny
best.
Kenny Foster, Ethan Zahn, John Fish, and the Cooligans. What's better than that?
All right. And we always, every time we close out a show, we always yell like the Cooligans. So we're going to do, you'll get
Should
it.
Should we sing it or something?
No. We are. You'll see it.
Kenny does, I mean, you could riff. Do it.
Yeah. Maybe we'll all just shut up and let you sing.
A country Cooligan vibe?
Never. We've actually avoided it.
So for Ethan Zahn, Kenny Foster, Johnny Fish, my name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero. So together, what are we?
The Cooligans!
Yeah.
That's it, guys.
Go Arsenal.
Come on, he's first.
Hi, this is Mike Coscarelli from Anxiety Now.
And Andrea Allen from the Hot Mess Comedy Hour.
We just launched the brand new OG Podcast Network and wanted to let you know that you can hear ours and other great shows by going to ogpodcastnetwork.com.
Also, be sure to follow the network on social media to keep up to date with new shows, videos, and live events.
That's at OG Podcasts on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Or you can subscribe to your favorite OG podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, baby.
Oh, we are back.
This
is a special, another special. Is it special? I don't even know what. Is this going to be a part of the same episode as the other NY Fest? Okay, cool. So we're back.
We're back, baby.
Clarified. It's not a separate episode. So welcome back to the show. This is dope. I'm like, I'm excited. This is like one of the a guest that I'm like, I can't believe they're on this show.
I'm super excited. When I found out, I was like,
No way.
who you guys have on?
Wait till you find out.
Wait till you
who's the surprise guest?
You're going to be floored.
Oh, my God. This guy that's going to be on later directed a movie called The Three Escobars. It is really, really good.
He one-upped me on that.
He found another one.
but we do have, he was the director, co-director of of The Two Escobars. The 30 for 30 film that was on ESPN, which is incredible.
Yeah, people I know that don't even like soccer still say that that's their favorite 30 for 30.
So. Yeah. Director Pele and has a bunch of films that we're going to talk about that are in the Tribeca Film Festival. Again, for NY Fest, this is why we get these hot guests.
Which is happening tomorrow.
We're happening tomorrow, April 21st at Brooklyn Bridge Park. We are here with director Michael Zimbalist.
Michael Zimbalist, everybody.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm incredibly just flattered that you're here. It is really cool. We've spoken to a lot of people involved in soccer that do. There's a lot of connections to soccer that are not just the sport in itself.
Absolutely.
We've spoken to rappers that are also soccer freestylers.
So classic combo.
Everybody knows those.
Which we all know that's what you do on your spare time.
Yeah. Well, I took up rapping. I was like, I'm going to do this. I might as well leave freestyle and move to football.
But let's start with, let's start with The Two Escobars. I think that's the thing a lot of people, a lot of our fans probably know you
Absolutely.
From. But you directed one of the best documentaries, not even just about soccer, but one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. It was very, very good.
Ever. Honestly.
And if you haven't seen it, it's 30 for 30. What was that your first film in soccer or in anything like that? Or have there been things prior?
It was. Yeah, my brother. So I had actually been running a theater company in Mexico, just completely unrelated. My brother did a documentary in Brazil called Favela Rising. It was about like a cultural movement in the slums of Rio. And we teamed up. He saw a play that I did in Mexico. He had just finished his film. I was ready for something different. We said, you know, let's go try something else.
Yeah.
We had a friend in Medellin, Colombia at that time who was telling us a story of actually completely unrelated story about some orphans of a union worker who'd been assassinated working at a Coca-Cola bottling plant. We thought that was really, we went to Colombia. We were researching it, developing that when ESPN reached out and said, hey, we're thinking about doing this series. 30 for 30, do you guys have any ideas? And we had been talking with some of our friends in Colombia about Andres Escobar, and they didn't even know, you know, exactly what had happened. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of theories around why he was killed, who did it. And it was one of probably, I think we gave ESPN five different ideas. And that was the one where, like, there's no way they're going to do a Spanish language film about, like, narco football in Colombia.
Yeah, of course.
And they're like, that one. That's the one we want.
Was that when you were like, oh, no, someone in the future might be making a movie called The Two Zimblists? Did you think, like, touching on this subject might be a bad idea?
My brother had been rolling pretty deep in the favelas of Rio for the last few years.
So he was gully.
I was the one looking at him like, are we good to go here? He's like, I handled this. So,
oddly enough, I went to a favela in Rio. I went on vacation with a bunch of friends, and every time I go, like, I'm Dominican, but like in Brazil, I'm like, I'm just Brazilian. Like, everyone just presumes that,
sure.
Even though I can't speak to anybody. But I wanted to actually experience Brazil and experience Rio. And everybody was like, the favelas, and there's a popular music called Baile Funk. That was like the thing that was
illegal to play on the radio.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that's a dangerous little community there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And a lot of DJs been assassinated.
So we met a cab driver who was like, became our guide, and he just took us everywhere. But he took us to a favela and took us to one of these parties, and it was like the best. It was just, it felt dangerous, but that's what made it like sexier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What makes it dangerous? Like all these guns that are pointing around us right now?
Well, you know, I think that the way my brother put it was that when they were filming in Rio, it was, you know, they obviously, when they were filming in the favelas, they had to get permission from the dons that were overseeing the different areas, different neighborhoods. And there it was really just about, like, how do we stay safe by avoiding the bullets? When we were in Colombia, it was a much more sort of nefarious force the Mano Negra, they would call it, the dark hand, mm-hmm. you know. That it is a little bit more amorphous and hard to track down.
Sure.
So it's a bit more psychological how that plays. But generally speaking, like with anywhere in the world, if you're being respectful, if you know you're not meddling in people's business, Although, speaking of meddling,
that's kind of what you do.
Yeah. Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Building
that?
A movie?
You're like, hey, let me put your hand in people's food. You're like, hey, this is, what is going on here?
Meddling? What are you talking about? This is respectful.
I actually remember being that guy in like junior high and just being like, you gonna eat that? And just putting like a finger in the sloppy Joe. I definitely did that once or twice.
Now but actually, relating to me.
Yeah, but the Gayon brothers who are implicated in the film, I don't know if I should say implicated, but there's suggestions from the subjects that we filmed that they had a hand in Andres Escobar's murder were extradited just recently.
Oh, whoa.
So, and I remember reading an article out, I think it was of Tiempo in Colombia, that said, you know, these are the guys from the two Escobars that, you know, people spoke about being involved. And finally, I think one of the brothers was extradited. So, and one of them was arrested during, like, right when we were about to release the film, and how, what the connections were between our filming and looking into it and those arrests, you know, I'll never really know. But
yeah,
it was interesting.
Yeah, because the movie in itself sheds light on stuff, but it wasn't very like accusatory. You weren't like, this is the guy or whatever.
Disgusting, their photos being slammed up on screen.
I mean, that film, we went into that film literally. I mean, the pitch was, who killed Andres Escobar?
Yeah.
That's what we want to know. We think maybe possibly Pablo Escobar comes into the picture, but how is not clear.
Yeah.
And so it's just this exploratory process of looking into, you know, what happened with Atletico Nacional? What is this thing called narco football?
Yeah.
Where did these guys come from? And in the
one
end,
team
like,
is called Millonarios, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's weird because
Mexicano had a few million himself.
Yeah. I grew up. Well, one of my best friends, his name is Johans. He's from Bogota, but he was the one where I finally learned. I didn't know much about soccer at the time. We worked at a GameStop together. No, don't mean to brag, but we he was the one who explained to me about Millonarios and like America de Cali and like all these other teams. And he would explain to me about the effect of Pablo Escobar and the narcos and how much of an influence. Yeah. And but Andres Escobar, he was like. I had heard about it when I was a kid,
right?
Because it was in '94.
I knew of it from the own goal against the U.S.
That's why I had heard about it. I just heard like, oh, a Colombian player got killed for scoring an own goal, what I enjoyed about the film, and I just watched it again recently, was how Colombians were stereotyped, and I didn't realize that the players themselves had so much pressure on themselves to like. Give a better impression of Colombians.
Oh, yeah.
And because I know, as a kid, like the Colombian drug, the cocaine, this, and that was just like the running joke that you would always make.
It still is. Like, you know, we're comedians when we're on stage and someone, you know, maybe we are where you're from.
Speak for yourself and your comedy right now.
When somebody says they're from Colombia, you know in your head, like, this is an easy joke that if I made, everyone will laugh because it's what everyone first expects about Colombia is there's something to do with cocaine here. You know, like, that's just what you expect. And that's still lingering. But you've done a bunch of other films. You've also met Shakira.
I did work with Shakira at a point in time.
So
you did your research.
Can I hug you? I mean,
we did do a project with Shakira. Yeah, Alas Foundation. She was working with doing some cool outreach work in Latin America. My brother and I started doing sort of more what we would call industrial documentaries. So we did a lot of stuff for the World Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, Ford Foundation, a number of other foundations where we were going to developing countries and exploring. You know, programs like incubation, that they're like how to incubate small businesses. And we grew up doing social service work with a program called Amigos de las Americas that puts, you know, young, typically Americans in like rural communities in Latin America. So that's where the Alas Foundation that Shakira had kind of fit into the whole picture. You didn't want it to go that direction, right? You're like, oh shit, that's like really like a lot more sentimental than I was looking for.
Instead of PK, it could have been you. Where are you from?
Massachusetts.
Yeah. Are you Latin?
No, sir. Not
because you have a really good grasp. Well, Zimbalist made me assume you're not, but then you never know with like Argentina and all that. There's like some
Exactly. Our father speaks Spanish. Yeah, our father's a economist, Latin Americanist who we grew up with his war stories of, you know, like he was in Chile during the Allende years and he got out the last flight before they shut down the airports for the coup in 73. And then he was a liaison to the UN for Cuba for many years.
Oh, there you go.
And did sort of comparative economics in Latin America. And then he got into sports, and he's a sports economist now. But we kind of grew up with that influence, and he would scold us for having bad accents when we would come back from Spanish class growing up. And then I lived in Mexico for many years. Now I have a place down in Medellin, so I sort of live between the two places.
Oh, very cool.
El acento paisa me ha pegado.
Oh, wow. That's parece like so authentic.
Oh yeah, coño, that's my there's my grandfather.
I used to have like a real typical kind of Mexican from like
the
city. Sing-song-y,
Chalín. Like I had that kind of accent, and then I spent time. And like if I speak to you, I'll have a Dominican accent within like an hour. You know?
Yeah, he's a chameleon. You know,
like I'm half Cuban, half Uruguayan. When I speak to all my Uruguayan family, they're like, "Here comes the Cuban," because I grew up in a Cuban household.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Oh yeah, quiere comer algo," and they're like, "That's not how you speak that way. That's like, what is that cadence?"
But you're just butchering the language. Please
I'm
stop.
Like, I don't go je boludo. Yeah, exactly. I don't do that. You know?
Right. So you, Mike, you have a couple other films in the Tribeca Film Festival.
And a television series.
And a television series. So let's talk about the soccer related ones first, right?
Right.
So you directed another documentary called Nossa Chape,
correct?
About the Chapecoense tragedy, and obviously, you work with heavy subjects.
Yeah. Is it like if a soccer player dies, you're like, moving?
Just get in there, get these guys.
Oh my dead soccer player alarm just went off.
I
just want to make the point that coming before we started rolling, I said this is going to be a tough movie to make light of. But there you go. There you go.
I promise you.
Look, you know, and I'll give an example because when this happened, this was it's like we do a comedy podcast about soccer. So it's a difficult subject to really cover, but we found a way to make it fun. And this was honestly, I thought, one of the funniest moments, and usually
we did a 100th episode, and this is the one he chose. The moment he
comedy
chose.
And tragedy, right? And we were talking about the Chapecoense tragedy, and
teams were offering to send players to Chapecoense to help,
or money to help support the team.
Right.
And there was this was maybe about a week.
Gundogan,
Ilkay Gundogan, Manchester City had an injury.
He injured his knee, and everyone on the team the next game wore his jersey backwards with his name showing in a show of like solidarity.
He injured his knee.
Entire team just sat through a plane crash, and these guys were like, everyone think of Ilkay Gundogan in these moments.
So we
were riffing on it, and as any comedian or anyone, I think if this happens to anyone, there a thing pops in your head and you're like, I probably shouldn't say that. What makes a comedian is someone goes like, ooh, I should say that in the microphone.
Sure.
So I said, I was like, yeah, actually, did you hear? Chapecoense is going to send the one player who survived to take his place to help out Manchester City.
Really, they needed help. They needed help. Poor Manchester City.
Literally the hardest I've ever laughed on the show. It was just so ridiculous.
As soon as I said it, I felt bad. You know I feel bad, and this is a clue for the audience. If I start laughing at the end of what I'm saying,
that's
my nerves.
Wrong. Like, I shouldn't have said that.
But then he laughed too, and I'm like, all right. Well, at least like two of us are going. Down. I'm not alone.
So it's clear. I mean,
I'll try not to laugh. I'll try and be political.
The tragedy in itself is not what is humorous or whatever. It's a very serious subject. But how did you guys approach it? How did it start to begin with? How did the project come about?
What is the idea? Because everyone kind of knows the story. What is it that you were sort of chasing in this film?
Well, I mean, God, I was following the story. You know, the plane of the Chapecoense team crashed outside of Medellin, where I live part time. So my brother and I were following the story. Fox Sports was devastated, as we all were, by the news. They, of course, had a few of their journalists were on the plane that passed away as well. They reached out to us, our partner Colby Goddard, with just the interest in following what was a potential rebuilding effort. We didn't even know what was going to happen at that point. And this was just a couple weeks after the crash, so the end of 2016. And within a couple of days, we had a crew on the ground. By the time everybody got back to Chapeco, the city where the team is from, we had cameras rolling as they started discussing what are we going to do next. 71 people died in the crash. Three players survived. One of them, Jackson Fulmon, lost his leg. His leg was amputated, so he wasn't going to play again. But Alan and Neto were both interested in recovering from their injuries and playing again. So there was that story of, are they going to be able to do this and get back on the field? And then there was the story of just the team. What are we going to do? I mean, it was 71 people, which included the vast majority of the players, but also the coaching staff, the administration, the board. So there, it was really rebuilding a team in record time, and they decided to do it. So it's tracking that rebuilding, tracking the players. And then what was really interesting for us as filmmakers and as humans was this question of how do we grieve, right? How do we as a family grieve the loss of loved ones? And there was kind of two camps that we found there. One that wanted to remember the dead, honor the dead at every step of the way, and the other that was really focused on moving forward with our own lives. And in the end, what was surprising was that they all, both camps kind of agreed that maybe neither of them was right, and that perhaps the right thing was just to be unified, which was sort of the slogan of the team that had passed away, was unity. Like, this was a team that didn't have any standout stars. They were very equanimous, you know, in the locker room.
A lot of local players, too.
A lot of local players, yeah. So it was, it was a really, really intense experience, it's an intense film to watch. I'll tell you, man, when we were editing that movie, it was crazy. I cried like every day we were editing it, just watching some of the footage.
I can really imagine.
Powerful. I'm sure.
Yeah,
I've seen some interviews in like Latin American television of the wives. They get interviewed. A lot of the wives of the players. There's about five or six that are very outstanding, that when they only received a small payment, they were very open about, like, look, I know everyone's going through this as well, but we have a family and the breadwinner is dead. And there was four or five that were very outspoken. And it's so funny because the first instinct you have is like, oh, someone's asking for money. But then you immediately realize, like, this must be one of the most traumatic things that they've ever gone through. And they must really need it if they're asking for it. Like, to get to the point where you're asking for it. So there's been so many times that this story's been brought up, and there's so many different angles to it. And there's so many people that this touched. So it must be really touching. It must be really difficult to sort of figure out what the story is here, because I'm sure this documentary could be, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours long if it needed to be.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it was maybe just because of our interest in who we are as filmmakers. When we hit the ground and started filming, we were very adamant that we didn't want to just film with the survivors of the crash. We didn't want to just film with the team. We wanted to film with the mayor. We wanted to film with the board members, really the whole community, fans we filmed with. So it's really in the same way, I guess, that the two Escobars, more than anything, became the portrait of national identity in Colombia during those years. This is really the story of a family that is this small city. It's a city of 200,000 people, but it's very isolated in southeast Brazil. And it really has that small city feel. One soccer team, everybody roots for the team. I mean, when they heard the news of the crash, they spontaneously all went to the soccer stadium for an impromptu vigil, because that was their meeting place. So it's really the story of this family. And it was a beast for production, because we were filming, you know, with scores of people. And then the editing was, of course, tough. And you're right, there was conflict. You know, there was definitely conflict. And I can't say it's all resolved. I think a lot of it's been resolved. But conflict from the families of the deceased, who felt that, you know, that the correct reparations hadn't, reparations and steps, and people upset that, you know, where are the pictures of the deceased? They were taken down from the locker room. Where's the memorial? It's been this many months, and we're not talking about those who passed away. So, you know, there's a lot of strong feelings.
Of course.
And people were put in tricky positions, too. I mean, so for us as filmmakers, we try not to take sides there, but really to be kind of journalistic and independent and give everybody their voice. We're fortunate the wives, you know, a large percentage of those that are involved in some of the conflict, were participating in the doc and spoke openly about what's going on.
As far as a director who works in films in soccer and football, how does that affect you, especially seeing the either tragedy, seeing that passion for the game? Has that changed your perspective on the game and what it means to people in general?
You know, I think the first thing that, because we played, you know, soccer growing up, but it wasn't until I really lived. I mean, my first real experience living outside of the U.S. was in Mexico. I lived for four and a half years or so. And, you know, it's just so part and parcel with the culture there that it's such a cool experience, such a different experience. It's, you know, I mean, the passions run high. So it also, there's some dirty things that come out of it as well.
Sure.
But I think that was probably my first, you know, more eye-opening experience, particularly around World Cups. God, I mean, that is really fun. It's cool to see it happening in the U.S. now too, right? Like the last couple.
Bigger. That's why we're here. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the last couple of World Cups, you could actually hear people screaming out your window in a city. Yeah. You know what I mean? When a goal is scored or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah,
when Italy won the World Cup, I lived by Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. I'm like, it was Italy.
Pandemonium.
They went nuts.
I grew up in Newark, which is a very inner city, but there's a section that's all Portuguese. Portuguese or Brazilian. And whenever Benfica win, you think the city of Newark has won something. Like, we're far away from it, and we can hear the parades.
Yeah.
And we all run to it because we know, like, whole pigs are coming out. Like, it's like it's a street festival. We're like, go for the food. Everyone's like, wear something red. Right. You know, everyone else, like, who cares if you're a Porto fan? Get down there.
It is weird. Like, us doing, working in comedy and trying to talk about soccer, like, what we're realizing is, like, the passion is so high sometimes, right? Where we have clubs that we support, but like we cover the league and we cover MLS and we have guests from different teams all over the country, and sometimes like passionate fans are like, I hate that you are even around that other person who plays for that other team. Like it's like there's people like genuinely get upset.
Yeah,
and I can imagine it even worse for you in that like there's. The subjects themselves are way more hot button and stuff like that.
Man, I remember, so this is not a story I don't know if I've ever talked about, but I remember we were trying to license the qualifier game that Colombia played against Argentina in the lead up to the 94 World Cup, where they beat Argentina 5-0. And we couldn't get a license, and it literally just came down to the broadcaster that had the rights over that footage being like, it's too painful.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to license this material. It was like,
yeah, I don't want it to be seen again.
That's like Bill Cosby buys all the what are those kids? The movie, the black and white show of all the kids being with buckwheat and all that.
Oh, the
Rugrats.
Not Rugrats.
You know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I know.
Because he thought buckwheat was too racist. So he bought the rights so no one could ever show it. That guy did the same thing.
Yeah, this is not like the head of some fan club. This is like some dude that runs like a conglomerate TV station. Yeah. You know,
he's like here's not how no one will ever see us losing.
Just because I personally hurts too much.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're really excited to get a chance to watch some of these films. We're going to go out there. I'm really excited to watch the Chapecoense film as well. And, you're going to be out at NY Fest, so everyone come out. See, is there where can people follow your work? Is there a place where people can find you specifically?
For sure. All Rise Films. That's our company that my brother and I run with our trusty crew. AllRiseFilms.com. We've got all our stuff up on there. So
awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
And we're here to announce. I mean, this is exclusive. They're going to make a film about us, which is really cool. It's going to be a short, apparently. I don't know why.
It's just so exclusive. Not even I was included in these plans.
Yes. It is going to be the tragedy of us trying to do soccer jokes on stage. Yeah. And bombing.
You never see it. It's because that damn guy won't give the right.
We thought it was going to be a feature. It's now going to be a short. And we're debating whether we should cut it down a little further.
It's all going to be shot on my iPhone.
It is now a Vine. Yeah. Michael Zimbalist, thank you so much
for being here.
It's an absolute honor. Make sure again, NY Fest, make sure you follow at NY_Fest, nyfest.org. It's going to be a great thing. Tribeca Film Festival, if you're going to be out in New York, go check out some films. Check out the Zimbalist brothers and their work. It's going to be great. So we usually, as we go out, we always do this. You haven't seen the show before, I'm guessing, but we usually we're the Cooligans, so we yell the Cooligans, so we want to include you in that. So you'll get it as soon as it happens. So for Michael Zimbalist, my name is Christian Polanco.
My name is Alexis Guerrero. So together, what are we?
The Cooligans! Yes!
All right.
That felt good.
That felt campy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Shh.